Good evening and welcome to Stockwatch. I'm Zinathi Gquma, and joining me to wrap up this week is Carl Geewers from Benguela Global Fund Managers and Chantal Marks from FNB Wealth and Investments. Thank you so much both for joining me. What a week. So we've had global markets, particularly the US markets, under pressure with the NASDAQ basically taking most of the hit, of course, as it is tech heavy. We've had bond yields spiking and of course, that affecting the tech stocks. The NASDAQ even went into correction territory. Starting with you, Chantal, has that had any impact on how you are looking at your portfolio, or has it been a non-event because you'd already priced it in a long time already?
No, so I do think it has an impact because there are opportunities in times of volatility, right? So a lot of the stocks that are maybe on your watch list, but you've been concerned around valuation, might actually start screening as better value during times like this. So it absolutely has an impact, especially if you're a longer term investor. Things get a little bit more complicated, I think, when you're trading shorter term, just because markets are so incredibly volatile. Again, there are opportunities in short-term trading when you're looking at volatile markets, but you don't necessarily want markets to act erratically, and that's what seems to be the case at the moment.
Yeah. Carl, what about you? I mean, are you conservative concerning this kind of environment, less stimulus, high interest rates, or are you sticking your head out into growth stocks still? Just how are you looking at that, even with all the noise? Or are you finding opportunities in growth as well?
To be honest, in the last couple of years, we struggled to find attractively priced opportunities in the high growth areas like the tech sector, especially the US tech sector. So we've actually been stepping back a bit, and probably detracted from performance over the last year or so to be underweight that sector. But I think it's important to manage the risk, and that is to ensure that you're not totally out of a sector, for example. But also within the sector, there's still opportunities to find attractively priced opportunities relative to some of the names that are pricing in ridiculous level of growth. And then obviously at the moment we're seeing the market wrestling with the interest rate hiking cycle, the tapering environment, and certainly growth stocks will come under some pressure given what's priced into them.
Yeah. And zooming into our local market, we've seen the JSE really bucking the trend against the global stocks going into record territory at least twice this week. And on that note, here's a question from Malcolm. Would the team be looking at SA-based or offshore JSE stocks for the short term, say, 2 years? And if you do go offshore, would you be looking at the dollar or the pound euro-based investment, Chantal?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot more value in local stocks at the moment, but you might not find the exciting growth opportunities that you could find offshore. But certainly some of the kind of stalwarts of the JSE don't look expensive at the moment. There's a lot of value, particularly in industrial shares. And if you go into the mid-cap and small-cap space, it becomes even more interesting. And I mean, this is fully backed up by what we've been seeing international companies do on the JSE. They're coming in, they're taking out our mid-caps and small-caps, and they're actually paying not very high valuations for it. So we are missing a trick if we're only looking offshore. Of course, there are opportunities offshore as well, as I mentioned, particularly when it comes to exciting areas like growth and tech, perhaps a little bit expensive now, but those opportunities could come with the interest rate cycle where it is. And then it is very much a function of the rand. So even though you wouldn't, from a very longer term perspective, be worried about the rand too much because it does tend to be a depreciating currency, you do want to pick your levels. I'd also implore on Malcolm to consider dollar-based investments rather than pound-based investments, just because it's the reserve currency of the globe. But I think overall it shouldn't make too much of a difference because the rand will probably depreciate against the pound over time as well.
Carl, what's your take on that? Are you as bullish on local shares as Chantal, or would you be looking offshore?
Yeah, I think one probably has to have a balanced view, because if you look at, I mean, certainly, as Chantal says, our market's looking quite a bit cheaper. And if you look at the long term, just in forward PE, our market is at all-time relative attractive valuation relative to developed markets, as an example. But I think the problem for our market is growth. And we've seen, you know, if you look at the growth expectations, economic growth expectations for emerging markets, I mean, we're way behind that. I think we're looking at 2% for 2022, whereas the US and even developed markets are growing, expected to grow at a lot faster rate. So I think that certainly is a reason for our market to be more depressed in terms of the valuation and the rating that it gets. But I think there are selected opportunities within our market. I think what the global environment gives is more opportunities in different industries and sectors. Where here we are a bit constrained from that point of view, but certainly there are attractive opportunities locally, and I wouldn't just go offshore just because you're scared of the rand blowing out. You know, that obviously you have to manage that risk, but I think in terms of opportunities, our market is looking reasonably attractive.
You're talking about a balance, Carl, and I mean, you mentioned that, you know, you would go offshore as well. But with that, dollar or pound, euro-based investments?
Yeah, I agree with Chantal, probably dollar. I mean, again, the growth, the excitement around any growth in Europe is pretty limited. So I'd stick to the dollar, and again, it's probably the main reserve currency, so probably the better bet.
Yeah. Another question from one of our viewers, Ansela Nombewu. I want to know which company saw the biggest growth last year that would make best investments this year. I'm ready to buy more shares, but the struggle companies faced and their responses to the pandemic makes me anxious. So I'm guessing she means, because she's saying that the companies that basically survived COVID-19, that posted decent earnings, but at the same time, companies that will still post decent earnings in this post-COVID environment. So I'm guessing maybe let's go at it by sectors, and maybe the top pick or top picks in those sectors that you pick. Chantal?
Yeah, it's quite an interesting way of looking at it. Remember, it's very important to remember that past performance is not an indication of future performance. Mm. And some of these companies have had some real tailwinds, particularly when we look at the resources stocks. Commodity prices have climbed quite substantially, and they're probably not going to climb by that much going forward. That said, there are still opportunities in the resources space. I think the PGM miners probably still look okay. We also don't mind a stock like BHP, where there are some really nice near-term catalysts. Other areas of the market that did quite well, the beaten down, most hated stocks on the JSE, Starnoth did well, ArcelorMittal did well last year. But those won't necessarily be my picks this year. I think this year you need to be more nuanced in your approach. You need to start looking for opportunities in areas of the market that you haven't looked before. I think that the mid-cap industrial space still offers a fair amount of opportunity. And within the broader industrial space, I think discretionary retailers could also surprise to the upside. We did have results out today, or sales prints out today, from Truworths, Mr. Price, and Foschini, and all of them were better than expected. Wage growth in South Africa has been stronger than anticipated, despite very weak economic growth. So there are still opportunities there. That's probably the sectors that I'll be looking at. And of course, in financials, the banks still don't look very expensive.
Very interesting that you mentioned Steinhoff. Of course, we have seen the rally in that share price. But I mean, there's still a question mark on whether they can really get out of the cloud that they've been under for quite a while. Carl, coming to you, I mean, which sectors are you seeing most opportunity? And in sectors that really did post profits during COVID-19, but can really still survive post COVID-19?
Yeah, I think one sector that Chantal didn't touch on would be the communications or telco sector, where you know, those businesses continued and in fact had some benefits in terms of the increased use of data. I mean, Vodacom and MTN benefiting there. So they've obviously seen a shift over time, you know, from away from, you know, your fixed your calls and those kind of things towards data. In the meantime, data prices have come down, but just the volumes have increased. So they benefited there, and I believe they'll continue benefiting. And that's outside of individual company elements that can help the company. But I think overall, the industry should benefit from, you know, continue benefiting beyond the pandemic.
Mm. Let's go into healthcare now. Jonathan Govender is asking, what's the panel view on Aspen at these prices, considering they will be manufacturing COVID pills? Chantal, starting with you.
Yeah, Aspen is a very interesting one because it's trading a lot lower than it did at its peaks, right? But it's a completely different business to what it was at its peaks. So even if you look at the multiples, so a price relative to earnings, a PE multiple, for example, it looks cheap relative to its own history. But the fact is it's going more into a direction of being a contract manufacturer, which means that it's also going to probably be more of a price taker. And that results in the multiple naturally being a lot lower than what it was when it was still kind of like a generics pharmaceutical company. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, I think it looks okay now. There's probably still something in it. You should get reasonable growth over the next year or two as COVID vaccines continue to be manufactured and rolled out. And they're doing some pretty cool stuff from a vaccine manufacturing perspective. Generally, they might be able to fill out some capacity in their factories, but this isn't high margin stuff. So I'm not too excited about Aspen. I think the easy money has been made. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Aspen has been one of the healthcare companies that have played a significant role during the COVID-19 period. But Carl, would you be going into a company like Aspen or maybe some of the more international ones like Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, I think the easy money has been made in those, and Aspen an example. You know, from this point onwards, you know, one of the big elements would be whether the vaccine environment will continue and to what extent, and whether how much. Moderna is obviously the vaccine element is significant in their life, whereas with Pfizer it's and Johnson & Johnson it's smaller component, so the benefit wasn't quite as significant. But I think what one has to look out for is whether, you know, these boosters that we're seeing that are coming through will be a continuous thing going forward. Then, you know, they'll probably get some growth from it. But I think the risk is that, you know, there's a bit more resistance to continuous boosting and just a decline in it and more pricing pressure. And that could see that excitement that might be priced into some of these stocks disappearing. So, yeah, there is some risk in them.
Still with us via Zoom this evening is Chantal Marx and Carl Geewers. Talking about Zoom, actually, that has been one of the work-from-home darlings. I mean, looking at the stock now, it's shed more than 50% from its high. Starting with you, Carl, I mean, we are still using Zoom, guys. I mean, is this sell-off a buying opportunity?
Yeah, I think the problem, and I think we spoke about the tech sector earlier, is the amount of growth that's priced into these new technologies, for example. And another one that recently, in fact, yesterday collapsed by 20% is Netflix. So as soon as the growth outlook disappoints, even if the growth is still there, but it's not as exciting, I think the market does punish it. So I'd be careful to price in too much of that growth. And then probably, like, for example, Zoom, I'd probably just watch it from a distance for a while.
Chantal, are you bored with Zoom? and
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so over it. and, I mean, I've been talking a little bit to some of the managers within our own business. And the idea is that you still need some kind of a human interaction in order to foster a good working culture, right? You can do a lot over Teams and over Zoom. You can be super productive from home. although not everyone is super productive from home. But ultimately, I think we're going to migrate back to the office, at least in part. So that huge work from home forever type scenario that was priced into Zoom probably is not going to materialize. So that's not a stock that I'm particularly excited about. Carl did mention Netflix. That is a stock that I'm particularly excited about. I think that perhaps the expectations were quite exuberant, but I think that they can continue to grow quite nicely just based on the investment that they're making in content. The fact that people have more than one streaming platform on their devices, and Netflix is usually one of them. This might be a buying opportunity for a name like that, where people won't stop watching TV. They might not watch as much TV, but they certainly won't stop watching TV altogether. And they'll probably still consume most of Netflix content. They'll just do it at night and over the weekends.
But well, I see that both of you are really excited about Netflix. But I mean, just this slowing growth in their subscribers, is it more of a competition or more of an opening up where people, this is the return of the cinema? And I must actually tell you guys that I went to the cinema for the first time since the COVID pandemic in December, and I realized how much I really missed that experience. I mean, Carl, talk to me about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's more a competition thing, and I mean, if you look at Netflix, their growth is primarily outside of the US, so the competition is. There is bigger or more intense outside of the US, or I presume, in terms of getting that fringe customer. And as you said, it's not that they're not going to grow. It's just the pace of growth. So I think the growth will still be there. Whether it'll be like the alternative like cinemas and so on, I doubt. I think cinemas will be more of a novelty. Where previously movies would be released via cinema, I think Netflix, they obviously are one of the major producers in terms of movies and so on. So they'll keep that within their environment. But I think in terms of competition, there are competitors, Disney Plus and so on, and locally we've got obviously Showmax or MultiChoice. But again, the cost is not that big to have a subscription to Netflix. So I think it's not really a big hurdle to stop a subscription. It's more about how fast they can grow into new subscribers. So I think they'll probably retain most of their existing market, and more a case of how fast can they grow and gain more customers.
Yeah, lots of interest on Capitec this week. Of course, you do know the news that came out of there this week was that employee BEE deal. Sinalo Manjoli is asking, the rise of Capitec shares, is there any room for growth? Should we consider buying the share or try look elsewhere at more affordable rates? But I see that there's a slight dip on Capitec for now. Chantal?
Yeah, Capitec announced the BEE deal, but it's not a very big deal. It's going to be dilutionary by about 6% in the next financial year, which isn't huge by BEE standards. The share price took a bit of a knock, but this thing is expensive. And again, it's always been expensive. And it's always delivered on the growth promise.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult one to call. I would look for opportunities. Perhaps there will be better opportunities than this slight dip. But I mean, Capitec certainly is a stock that I wish I had in my portfolio, but it always feels like it's too expensive to buy. On the banks front, generally, there are some cheaper ones out there, but probably not offering you that growth. I think our favorite one at the moment from a valuation perspective is Nedbank.
Okay.
It trades at a significant discount to the rest of the sector, where it's always actually traded kind of in line.
Carl, I mean, Chantal said a lot of yours there, because it is quite expensive. But I mean, at the end of the day, as expensive as it is, you'll still get very good returns. So, I mean, when there is a dip, like the slight dip that we did see this week, is that when you buy, or should you just let it go and just close your eyes and buy?
I mean, it was expensive at 100 Rand 10 years ago.
exactly.
I think Capitec certainly has still a lot of growth levers. You know, they've been quite disciplined in, like, in terms of their, you know, not cluttering their product suite and confusing clients, very client-centric. So I think they can still continue growing. They've got Mercantile that they, you know, it's still very early days in that space. So I think growth will be there. And, you know, it's a question of how much you're willing to pay for that. I think the rising rate environment will benefit, obviously, all the banks, but should drive the interest margin. But then, you know, you will see some credit losses coming through. But I think overall, even though it looks expensive, I think it's on the dips, I would probably buy.
Chantal, I think you've actually already answered this. This comes from Ndabezezwe Mnube. May you consider Capitec and Dimension Data both being heavily impacted by past and future decisions in respect of transformation transactions? Are these just market jitters, or is transformation eroding shareholder value? I think from what you said, Chantal, that firstly, it's not a big deal in terms of the share price, and also even just the dilutionary effect. Would you agree that it doesn't erode shareholder value?
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily erodes shareholder value. I think it actually adds shareholder value if done correctly. Obviously, if you're going to do an under-the-table deal with a related party, with someone that you know and bribe with regularly, that is dodgy, and it's probably going to erode shareholder value. Mm. But if you look at what Capitec is doing, they're actually offering shares at a 50% discount to their employees, right? And long-serving employees. This means that employee interest and shareholder interests are aligned. That is good for the bank, and that is good for shareholders. So I think the way that they're doing it is really, really smart. And we've seen some other successful examples of this as well. I'm just thinking about the original SAB Senzele transaction where bottlers and guys that were driving trucks and some of the partners that owned taverns were involved in that BE scheme, and it created a stakeholder engagement, stakeholder alignment, and also made a lot of people a lot richer than they were before.
Yeah, I've got questions on two more stocks. I'll give one of you each. Carl, do you look at Orion Metal Minerals?
I mean, to be honest, I've had a brief look at it.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a question about
So someone's asking, what's the panel's view on all the hype on Orion Metals? Of course, they also had an update yesterday talking about tapping into the opportunities on copper. What is your take on that?
Yeah, so, you know, it's not one that would religiously look at, but it is interesting. I mean, it's one of the, within the resources, one of the more exploratory, you know, we don't have many of them left in our market. So it's an exploration and development mining business with a few projects, but a big one, the copper and zinc one near Prieska. And I think the hype that is talked about is the share price reacted quite positively on the update, which where management is looking to fast track the that project development on the back of, you know, a conducive commodity price environment and also, you know, positive drill results. So I think from that point of view, that is why there's a bit of hype at the moment. The risk with exploration and development or mining development companies is that, you know, there's still a lot of uncertainty. So you rely on a lot of things that could still go wrong. And then obviously it's not producing for quite some time. So commodity prices can still change. So I would just classify it as highly speculative.
All right, right. Lastly, Chantal, sticking with resources, John Wooten and Gerald have a question on Sasol and Kumba. What's the team's opinion on buying Sasol? And the other one, can Sasol and Kumba go up more, or are they overpriced, Chantal?
So it depends on your view on the oil price and on the iron ore price. So both of those commodities ran quite hard. Iron ore has run out of a bit of steam, but it seems to have found a little bit of support. Now it depends on how long these prices stay there, because there's not really a lot of opportunity for it to move further up. So these companies could continue to do well and generate good cash flows, but at some point, I think both the oil price and the iron ore price will start retreating to to more acceptable levels, and then these share prices will come under a lot of pressure. So I think it's a high-risk game at the moment. You can still make money, but it's a lot more riskier than it was a few years ago.
Mm. All right, something that you don't consider risky, going to your stock picks now. Carl, starting with you.
Yeah, I'll pick MTN. So it's not a, I wouldn't say it's a screaming buy, but it's, I think it's still attractive. It's done incredibly well over the last year in 2021. But I think it's still on track to continue performing. You know, the balance sheet looks in a lot better shape. Management's done well in, you know, selling non-core assets and you know, getting cash to pay down debt. And then obviously the situation in Nigeria is always plays a role within MTN. And I think the higher oil price should make things run a bit smoother in terms of being able to repatriate, you know, cash from those territories. And, you know, they've exited some of the very high risk territory. So I think you're getting a good dividend yield. It's not looking stretched in terms of valuation, and growth should be quite reasonable.
Yeah. Chantal, your stock pick for today?
Yeah, so mine is actually one that I've liked since last year, but it hasn't really done as much as I would have liked to have seen. But Karoo with 5 O's, the old
yes,
car tractor.
Yes, please, 5 O's, you need to.
Yes, there are 5 O's. It's a super exciting business in vehicle telematics, which is a vastly underpenetrated market, particularly outside of South Africa. And this company is really moving quite quickly into the Asia Pacific region, as well as the US, and they've got a footprint in Europe as well. Subscriber growth numbers have been very strong. They're really good operators. They've got some fantastic proprietary technology. And I think that share price definitely still has legs, even near term, but happy to hold it and almost forget about it in the bottom drawer as well.
All right, thank you very much for your insights to both of you. That's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guests, Carl Geewers from Benguela Global Fund Managers and Chantal Marks from FNB Wealth and Investments. From Izinathi Guma and the rest of the team, have a great weekend.